Hi, team. Welcome to the Escape Podcast for Star Wars The Old Republic. This episode, you'll hear news about the upcoming class nerfs and buffs, the sequel to the summer update blog post, the winter update, and a holocron answering a listener question on how to level a sorcerer. And maybe you'll learn what the temperature is inside a tauntaun. As usual, we have an astromech standing by to record this and surf the solar winds to get this to you. You all set, EPC-9? Yes, I'm sure your shielding will hold up to that kind of radiation. Here's some sunscreen. You'll be fine. Hi, Seema. How are you and how's it going?
It's going very well. I'm doing very well. We had a good week. The bounty contract week was in full swing this week, so I spent quite a bit of my playtime messing around with that. And I got this close to getting that wanted Dead or Alive achievement. I still have 2 kingpins left to get the next time it comes around. But according to my eyeball math, which is to say I looked in my inventory and saw a lot of rep tokens, I think that will be enough to get me through to finish out the rep in the next 2 weeks. So I'm happy about that. Let's see. We were a little light on ops this week due to someone, Machia, having a family trip planned. However, we did an awesome run in Dread Fortress tonight with Sup. I feel lucky that I got to go along. It was one of those epic runs where we were like down to the end of our night. We're down to the wire. We had one last chance to get the last boss down, and we got her, and it was the first time for that team. I think it was the first time for that team. But anyway,
yeah,
it was one of those epic wins that it was really a lot of fun.
Yeah, I could tell it was the first time because we saw those achievements flying by. So yeah, we could tell it was first time in guild chat. So yeah, I've been doing similar things. Wednesday, we had our run in Scum and Villainy where we pick up some pugs. And again, we got started late and we picked up a couple pugs. One guy said, oh, I haven't been in here in months and haven't been back in the game. And as a result, we wiped a couple times as he ran in weird places. And
I'm laughing because it's that thing where you see the button, and even though you don't know the fights and you're unfamiliar with your group, you just run up and click it anyway.
So he wasn't in vent, just for fun as a joke. We always yell when you're coming up to that to the town where you press the button, the doors open. The oasis area where you break up into 4 teams and each team has to DPS down their individual boss. We always yell in vent, don't press the button. and this dude ran right up and pressed the button. So that's fine. That was fine. I don't mind that stuff if we're pugging. No. It's that we're trying to bring people in and get them some runs too. So that was okay. And yes, Machia was having a life, so we didn't do Lords of Light or Taco Harder this week. But instead, we did bounties, and I did get Dead or Alive, wanted Dead or Alive. And it was a little bit of a challenge. You and I were talking about it. This arrangement that they have now where once you kill a kingpin, you can only get that, you can't do that kingpin on that character again that week, makes it a little complicated for you to sort of arrange which of your characters are going to unlock which kingpins and in what order so that you can get both captured and killed on every kingpin to get that wanted Dead or Alive achievement. So I had to do some weird things and some flip-flops and wait an extra day, but I did manage to get all of them down. Had to have a couple lower level characters do some unlocks and kill a couple kingpins, but got it and got the title for no particular reason, but because it's there.
For fun. Well, congratulations. Yeah. I'm not jealous at all.
And I did notice, which I was surprised at. I didn't until I was realizing that I was champion level and seeing if I had stuff that I could go and get. The new mount that they put on the vendor, they charge completed bounty contracts instead of credits, even though you also have to have the rep to buy the mount, the Prexon Aether. So that new Praxon mount costs 50 completed bounty contracts, which I thought was interesting.
I hadn't really realized that either until you mentioned it to me. I do think it's kind of a cool thing because not only is it gives you something, you know, a reason to do more bounty contracts, but also it creates a more extended market for them too, for people who just want to use the bounties for, you know, making a little cash.
And people are selling them as high as 100K per completed contract and as low as 30K completed contract, or maybe 28 on Jedi Covenant this week. I also saw a note, I think in DevTracker, where there was comment from the developers saying, hey, we're going to add new rewards to these event vendors over time as well. So if more rewards show up there where you need to sort of continue to grind the event even after you've completed it completely, that makes sense. And I do like that. It's a reason to go back to it. And I don't know. I have fun with the bounty contract one, especially on my bounty hunter. And I prefer to do all of it on my bounty hunter. It feels right.
I'm sitting here too, realizing that another thing I like about this is that you can get the bounty contracts on your own. So if you just want to play for a few minutes and decide to go kill a henchman, or a kingpin or whatever, you can do that. Because on the Gree event, they had a similar thing where you could get those epic, you know, the purple drops that you could use as currency to buy various things. But you had to get those from the ops or from that one heroic quest. Could you get them from the world bosses too? But there wasn't a way to get them just on your own. So you were kind of
right, the Xenoanalyst.
Yeah, exactly. So like for me, when I switched characters between level 50 ops and level 55 ops, all my Gree items were on my character that I don't play anymore. So the level 55 Gree event is really, you know, it's nothing to me because I would have to start all over accumulating those tokens again.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. They should make those Gray Helix components tradable and sellable. That might revive that Gray market a little bit.
Well, I have another great point too. On the rep tokens, why don't they just make those so that you can mail them around to and you just keep them all in one character, and just since the rep counts for your legacy anyway, it would be so much easier if we could just mail them all to one character and then decide which ones you're going to click. And
yeah, you're absolutely right. I never thought about that. The rep is all bound to legacy. Why not just make the item bound to legacy and you could just keep them all in one place for those of us that are min-maxing and using spreadsheets to determine exactly which ones to click on. Waiting until Monday night.
Spreadsheet.
Yeah. And then I also have been leveling up my Marauder, continuing to do that. I did my Marauder today up to level 48, almost level 49. Did some PvP as I do almost every day to get the PvP daily done. And today was an arena thrown in. And as well as, I think each day, I've been getting arenas relatively often. I know some people have been getting them quite a bit less. But I got Alderaan today, and I got a 4v4 arena on the Tatooine one.
So did you win your arena?
No. I was last one standing in top DPS, top damage, and I had most killing blows. So I'll put that out there. But no, it's a toss-up because it just depends on the makeup of your team and how strong your individual random team happens to be. And it was fine. It was actually relatively close between our two teams. We lost two in a row, but it was relatively close. We killed one or two of their team before they killed all of us. And they had a sniper on their team. And the question there is, do you kill the healer first or do you kill the sniper first? It's hard to kill healers because it's hard to get them down. But if somebody could put pressure on the healer and you take out the sniper, you get a lot of damage taken off of you.
This gives me flashbacks to when I used to be very active in arenas in WoW, because it was always put pressure on the healer. And of course, I was the healer. I didn't like it.
Yeah. That's a terrible idea. Yeah. You should let healers do whatever they want.
Yes.
But that's what I've been doing. We do have some news this week. And I brought in one of my companions, Brunmark, to talk about the news this week. I thought that would be nice. How you doing, Brunmark? Very nice. Well, how's it going? How's everything for you these days? Oh, really? Really? Killing more of everyone in your clan? How very Kaiser Soze of you. That's awesome, Brunmark. Why don't you go ahead and introduce the news? Yes, absolutely.
I'm glad you're translating.
Oh, doesn't everybody understand that belching air through that
nose tube
proboscis of some kind that sticks out of his face? No, you're fine, dude. Don't. We're not making fun of you. Please don't stealth kill me.
We're not laughing at you.
We're slurping air through our noses with you.
Right.
Okay. So, yes, we do have a couple news things this week. One was pretty cool. People have been waiting for something along these lines to happen for quite some time. There are class changes that have been announced. I don't think it's everything everyone had hoped for, but that's never going to happen. But there are some interesting class changes that did get announced, and there's a blog post up that talks about them in detail that you can go and look at. We'll talk about a couple of them here. I think there is some interesting stuff. Assassins and Shadow Tanks. Tanks in particular, Assassin versus Shadow, do get a buff, which I think is nice because this is things that we've noticed, especially as we've gotten into hard modes. The shift from the type of bonus that Shadows and Assassins get is shifting from a bit of an extra heal when they execute some of their damage, their tanking abilities, that's switching to straight up damage mitigation. And the reason that's important for a tank is because you need mitigation to be able to avoid spike damage rather than take all of the spike damage and get a little bit of healing afterwards. So that's good.
I think that's going to change their rotation a little bit too, because one of the reasons they cast that channel spell in the first place is to get that heal. It's because that's part of, you know, keeping their health up. And without that heal, now it's going to be, is that channeled ability providing enough other advantage for it to stay in the rotation?
Right. Right, which it does stack. It stacks mitigation, so I bet it will continue to be important, and we'll have to just see how that sort of shakes out, which is good. I think that's going to be good overall.
That's a good point.
Assassin Shadow DPS also gets a slight buff. This affects PvE and a little bit of PvP. There's a couple of their main rotation abilities that are getting a slight boost, which I like. I've got a Assassin that I mostly tank with. In fact, I tanked with him tonight just on the first boss of Dread Fortress while Sup was waiting for some people. But I'd like to take him and do a little waiting for the real tank to come. Well, I said props to the healers because I've got a couple campaign armoring still in to keep some set bonuses. I felt bad for the healers. I'm mostly in 162 and some couple 145s on that guy.
No, you did fine. It was great, actually.
I was glad we could step in, otherwise we would have been waiting. But then we did get the real tank, and then they completed the instance, so that's cool. And then finally, Marauder's Sentinel is getting minor buffs to the stacking buff abilities so they don't fall off as quickly. So they have a thing that stacks up over time, and it was falling off in 15 seconds. That goes out now to 25 seconds. And then they got a little bit of a nerf, which I think will mostly affect hard mode, nightmare mode teams, where Bloodthirst Inspiration was able to be chained. You could stack up a whole bunch of Marauders or Sentinels, and they could be chaining and popping their Bloodthirst Inspiration over the course of a long boss fight. Now that can basically only be cast once per boss fight. There's a 5-minute debuff on anyone that gets Bloodthirst or Inspiration cast on them. That's going to make it more difficult for that to be useful. Hmm. And finally, Marauders and Sentinels also got a little bit of a nerf to PvP, where they're guarded by their Force of Undying Rage, which is the shield they pop, which takes half their health off and then makes them immune to all damage whatsoever for 4 seconds or a little bit longer. That's now nerfed to the point where the health comes off at the end instead of the beginning, and they have a little bit longer cooldown. So I think this is more directed towards arenas, where if you get a good healer backing up a marauder and they pop that, they take half the health of whatever they were at down, and while they're completely immune, they get healed to full by a good healer. Right. It made it very difficult to compensate for. It's a little overpowered. So what else did we have? I think we had a couple more. What did you have, Seema?
Oh, well, there's a change to the overload shot and quick shot for the agent and smuggler. It's a little bit of a damage buff. BioWare says that they found that agents and smugglers weren't using this particular shot enough to their liking, so they are making it so that it does a little bit more damage. Also, the Juggernaut Guardian, there's a DPS buff in PvP. Well, it's actually more than just a DPS buff. This is the one where if you're using Ravage or Master Strike, there's a talent now that you can get 100% chance of immobilizing the target for 2 seconds, I think it was, during or to the end of your Ravage or your Master Strike. And in a way, that's huge, right? So like you can, your target, especially in PvP, can no longer run away from you, or I don't know if they can interrupt this or not, but if they do, then they've used up their interrupt, or they've used up their, their PvP runaway card, their immobilizing breaking card while you're doing this. So I think that could be a pretty good game changer in some matches.
So Ravage Master Strike for Juggernaut Guardians is a big percentage of their DPS, and having all of that channeled ability hit the target is pretty important. So I know this is another time my son was looking over my shoulder, and you have this on the Marauder too, but it's more important for Juggernaut because the Marauder has other tricks that add to their DPS rotation. But every time we're going, I'm executing Ravage, if the person either doesn't interrupt me or doesn't run away, he's like cheering on, getting that last tick of the Ravage in. He's like, yeah, take it, take it. Yeah, I love it when they take the whole ability.
That's funny. And along similar lines for the Inquisitor and the Consular, they're making the dots so that they are no longer cleansable, which will be important in PvP too, because one of the things that Inquisitors and Consulars complained about in PvP is so much of their damage comes from dots, but the dots were just useless to them because they were so easily gotten rid of. So, and just equalized as if they'd not cast them. So this is going to be a big change to that. And they also clarified a definition of cleanse versus purge, with cleanse being the sort of short cooldown ability that many classes have to remove a negative debuff off of themselves or other players, versus purge, which is like the long cooldown sort of class defining abilities that you might have in your class that remove debuffs from yourself. So like, for instance, when you if you vanish, for instance, you're an operative and you vanish and that removes debuffs from you, that would be a purge.
So this makes sense, and I think this definition is going to clarify, probably it'll probably have impact in PvE and boss fights as well. There'll be purgeable abilities and cleansable abilities and abilities that can't be cleansed, and so they'll be able to talk about cleanse and purge in much more consistent terms.
So that point about the dots of the Inquisitor and the Consular, they won't be cleansable, but they will still be purgeable. So you'll be able to use your long cooldown ability to get out of, a bunch of dots on you, but you won't be able to run with a healer at your side that's, cleansing a couple off every 4.5 seconds. And then the last thing I have is that operatives and scoundrels can now be charged and or pulled even when they are in cover. This doesn't affect snipers and gunslingers. They can stay in cover and they still cannot be charged or pulled out of cover. But it was just a change for operatives and scoundrels. I guess BioWare didn't really envision them using cover as much as they do, especially just for the purpose of not getting pulled out. So no more hiding, you scoundrels.
Yeah, silly. Silly operatives. Yeah. That's for snipers, gunslingers. Well, I mean, then they can also stealth and stab me in the back and stomp me and kick me in the nads.
But at least you can pull them over so that then they can kick you in. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there we go. Let's see what else was news this week. We had the winter update blog post, which was nice. So they had the summer update, which talked about all the things that are coming in the summer, and now they have the winter update. We all know that Galactic Starfighter is coming, so that's cool. And we really should be focused on that as the next major content update. But they wanted to throw a couple things out there to ensure that people are thinking about what's going on. There's double XP weekends around Thanksgiving. There's bounty contracts continuing, and those are going to be every month. So they wanted to stress that's coming in November. So keep an eye out for that. I think it's the second week in November. They said the Gree will be returning. So keep an eye out for that. And I wonder if they'll add new things to the Gree vendors at that point, like they've talked about.
That would be nice.
Yeah, it would be. I have enough Gray Helix components where I could go buy the mount right now. I just haven't bothered because I have a lot of mounts.
No, I hate you.
But it would be nice if I could. It'd be nice if I could buy something else interesting and jump ahead of everyone else and be
if
cool.
If they have new items, I hope they're for credits.
Nice. I'm
too lazy. I don't want to do those world bosses. I don't want to do. Yeah, never mind.
You know, one other thing with this winter update that I thought of, I did listen to UtiniCast this past week because they had a call out to us that they said, hey, we're doing a good job. They talked about us on their show, which made me thrilled because I think those guys are pros and we're just doing some goofy stuff here on the side.
I love those guys.
But they had speculation. Teo had a bunch of speculation about, is there going to be an event coming back at the end of the month for Halloween? And for some reason, I don't know what he's got in his head, but he thinks, and those guys are thinking, that the Rack Ghouls may be coming back for Halloween.
I don't want to get excited for that because I just don't want to be disappointed.
Okay, so you know my rule about expectations. You keep your expectations low, and when they're exceeded. So yeah, I won't get my hopes up either.
Oh, no.
But that would be great.
They're growing again. I've exceeded them.
Here, I'll throw another one of these out. I'll tell you sometime my theory of happiness about the small cup and large cup and filling up your cup and how that relates to happiness sometime, but I won't explain that theory now.
Okay. I'll listen to that later, Uncle Max.
Seema keeps a page of all the things that I should talk about in the future that I keep saying I'll talk about and then I don't. But that's that.
It's called Things Max Says He Will Talk About.
Yes. So what else do we have? I think we have one more news item.
Yes. SUP still has open spots. So check our forums, which you can find info on how to do that on newoverlords.com, which is where we have our podcast page. But definitely could use healers. Probably just about anything would work. So check it out. We'd love to have you come and join in.
Yeah, I think Arvashet could use one of each. We have people filling in those slots, but it's people who are doing other operations on other nights. So I think he could use one of each at this point. So come take a look. Look at the forums, look in our blog post. We'll have some links. Or jump on Jedi Covenant and come check in with Seema and I, and we can tell you all about it.
And really what you'd be doing would be 8-man ops on Monday night and then joining in on the 16-man ops on Wednesday nights. So it's fun. It's a fun thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Those guys are cool. So, all right. Well, this week we do have something to talk about for our segment.
Deep in the ancient monster-infested tomb of Marka Ragnos, there is a holocron filled with dark secrets and encased in a great stone monument.
Yes, we have a holocron to talk about this week, which is dark secrets about how to level a sorcerer. So Walrus 50, I love the name, Walrus 50 replied to the post on our latest podcast for episode 8 and said, hey, great podcast. And I really appreciate that. But he said, hey, I would love to hear, he must be in the middle of this. What are your tips for leveling a sorcerer? So we decided this week that we would get into some detail on this and talk about two different ways two different methods for leveling a sorcerer. So I'll kick it off. I'll talk about my favorite way to level a sorcerer, and then Seema will talk about hers. Mine is method number one. Hers is method alpha.
Alpha obviously being greater than one.
Or is it? So my method, which I get a big kick out of, I'm a big fan of the madness spec for leveling and for end game in playing either a sorcerer or a consular. So I did this with my consular. I also did with a sorcerer. My sorcerer is only up to level 40, but my consular is 53. I think it's 53 or 54. The key to madness really comes between levels 20 and 25. That's when the tree really develops. So you could be getting a little bit more out of lightning spec early if you're going to go DPS, but I really like how madness starts to develop specifically between 20 and 25. So the first thing I would recommend grabbing as quickly as you can, because it's my favorite part of the madness tree, is Death Field. Death Field is an AoE, an instant cast AoE that you drop on the ground, hits five targets, and it does a couple extra things once it DPSs those targets as well. And as you go up the tree in madness, it does more. So first it'll do DPS to your targets, and your companion can help then knock the rest of them down. You'll also get a little bit of healing on you. And as you go up the tree, I think probably by about 30, I think is when you get 30 or 35 is when you get Death Mark, which then puts a debuff on everybody that gets hit by Death Field. That makes your dots do more. So this is really a dot spec. Madness is all about the dots. What you also get between 20 and 25, you'll be specking into the talent called Madness, which makes Force Lightning no longer have a cooldown. So it allows you to chain Force Lightning. So then the next 3 points that you'll want to put talent points into are Sith Efficacy, which makes Force Lightning less costly to cast, which basically makes it nearly force neutral to just chain cast Force Lightning over and over and over. Which is great. So then you've got free Force Lightning to keep casting, and you don't even have to finish casting Force Lightning to get value out of it. So at 25, you get this cool ability called Wrath, which allows Force Lightning to proc an insta cast of either Crushing Darkness or Lightning Strike. And what that does is allow you to take Crushing Darkness, which is one of your bigger dots, and cast it as an insta cast while you've got all of this other stuff going on in your fight. So you can be very mobile. You can have a lot of these insta cast things going on. Drop Force Lightning when you can stand still and then get an insta cast Crushing Darkness off. So from there in the tree, you don't need to worry about the rest of the tree. You just put your talent points in as you go up. Your dots are going to get better, and the healing bonuses are going to get better. At the very top of the tree, you get another dot with a root associated with it, which for PvP I really tend to like. But what it gives you the ability to do with a good tank companion, so I recommend Kemval or Kaizen if you're a consular, or Treak, who's the best companion, as we've said pretty much every episode so far. Oh, I don't have... Treak didn't join us this week. I'll find Treak in a little bit.
She's sleeping.
I recommend sending your tank companion in with their AoE taunts on, so they taunt all the mobs. And then for you to start casting Force Lightning on the strongest mob there. So send your tank companion in on the strongest mob and you start casting it. So it's usually a strong, you have strongs and a couple regulars, or an elite and a couple regulars. So you start casting Force Lightning. And then when Force Lightning procs Wrath, then you drop your Death Field. You drop your Death Field on all of the mobs. They all get hit. And your Death Field, as you get higher, puts the dot debuff on the mobs. So now your dot debuff is available. You drop your instaproc, your instacast off the proc, Crushing Darkness. You drop the rest of your dots, maybe spread more dots around the group, maybe cast Lightning Storm across the group, and everything just dies. It's really, really nice.
I have to say, that is a lot of fun. I have done it that way too, and it is very fun.
Yeah. And the dots, once those dots all start ticking, especially with having death mark on them off of the death field, you'll be taking down elites and they'll just be dying and dying, and you won't have to, you could just walk away. You can do that slow walk away from the explosion that you see in all the action flicks. Yeah. It's very cool.
That's a good picture.
Now, Lightning Spec is cool too. A lot of people like Lightning Spec. It's a little more turret folk. You know, you're a little more rooted while you're in Lightning Spec. So I tend to do PvP while I'm leveling also, which is why I really like Madness, because I can be on the run and dropping death fields and dots on people all over the place. But Lightning Spec is good, especially in Flashpoints and Operations. So you can look at that too. But so that's my view. That's the way I like to level a sorcerer. What about you, Seema?
Well, I leveled my sorcerer and my sage both as healers. However, I did spend some, 10 or 20 levels on one of them leveling with the madness spec, and that was a lot of fun. I ended up going back to healing though, because it's just, for me, it struck me as quicker to do dailies like on McCab and stuff, because I never have to do the, wait for the regen thing, because I just, as I'm running to the next mob, I'm just, casting my hot and on we go. Or we didn't even take damage to begin with. We being me and my companion, of course. But if you're leveling up as a healer, there's a few talents that are sort of the key talents to get. And also, if you're leveling a healer, you may want to pop into some flashpoints, or you can do this just, questing all the time too, solo or in groups or whatever. But one of the first things that you will want to grab, it's in the second tier, it's called Dark Mending, and it reduces the cast time of Dark Infusion, which is at that point really the only heal you have. So you probably want to pick that one up. And then in the third tier, you get Resurgence, which is your heal over time spell. And that's really the first instant cast thing that you get that's healing related. That is a healing spell, because you already have your bubble, which is instant. But this is your hot, which is also instant. And then right next to that is Force Bending, which you will also want to pick up at the first opportunity, because that makes your rejuve, your resurgence proc conveyance or Force Bending, which will either reduce the force cast of your next that long cast heal, or it will increase the crit rate of Innervate. Innervate you don't have yet, but even if you don't want to take this talent because you don't have Innervate yet, you might as well just take it, because you're going to want to have it, because it's Innervate. You have to have conveyance, because that's all part of your mana regen picture, which we will get into one day probably if we ever talk about. That's probably more appropriate when we're talking about in-game. On your fifth tier, that's when you get Innervate. That is a channeled healing spell and really one of your bread and butter spells as well. You definitely need to pick that up. And on the sixth tier, there's something called Force Surge, which is a, when that procs, it allows you to cast Noble Sacrifice without the regen degeneration that it has. You still will take the hit to your health, but it won't apply that debuff that makes your force regen much slower. So that's another key talent that you've got to have. And then at the very top is the AoE heal. And this is really the signature spell for the sages and the sorcs. It's the purple puddle for the sorcerer, and it's the golden puddle for the sage. But really, that's the AoE heal that everybody's familiar with and looks for all the time.
Yeah, and loves. That's awesome.
Yeah. Then there's a couple of sort of support/utility talents that you need to pick up from the middle tree in the first row. There's one called Reserves, which gives you 100 more force, which is important. Force management is an important issue of healing when you're sage or sorcerer. And in the second row on that same tree, there's something called lightning barrier, which increases the absorption of your bubble, which is fantastic because your bubble is instant cast and it has no cooldown. So the stronger you can make that your bubble, the better, because that means you can cast it, cast less healing, and in the end use up less force. And then in the very right-hand tree, which is the madness slash balance tree, on the first tier, there's a thing called Will of the Jedi, Will of the Sith, which increases your willpower. So you want to pick that up. So that's just all about talents and stuff. But the real game changer comes for leveling when you're questing at level 34, when you get Force Quake or Lightning Storm. Lightning Storm on the Sorcerer side and Force Quake on the Sage side. That comes at level 34. And as a healer, that is really the first and only AoE spell that you get. And so it changes completely your sort of gameplay, and I'll get into that in a second. We're lucky in that we get Kaizen or Kim Val as our very first companion. Some classes get their ideal companion later in life, but we get our tanking companion right away. And that's what I recommend. They are harder to kill and they keep threat better than a DPS companion. When you get to higher levels and you know enough or feel confident enough to make your own choices, you can have a DPS pet out and you'll kill things faster, but you'll take more damage, spend more time healing. So in my opinion, it's sometimes kind of a wash. So you might as well just keep your tank pet out anyway, do less healing, run faster, get more done. In terms of how you make a pull when you're out there leveling by yourself or in a group as a healer, I kind of make a distinction between a pull that's so large you think you might not succeed and a pull that's just an everyday pull that you know is going to be fine. If you're looking at that pull that's going to make you pull out all the tricks out of your hat, then what I do is I send my companion in, which is going to be Kaizen, Kim Val, or Treak. I send them, say you're looking at a pull, and this is why I like to play with as in a healing spec, because I can look at a pull that has like three strongs and two elites and three regular mobs and make it work, right? So what I would do is I would possibly CC one of the elites, but I would send my tank in after one of the weakest mobs. And while my tank companion is running in, I'm casting at the same time one of my long cast things. If I'm heading for a weak mob, then I'm going to be casting a direct damage spell. So that by the time my tank hits that first weak mob, my spell is landing. My tank puts down his AoE taunt. All the mobs turn on him. And at that point, we're just killing mobs one by one. And I'm healing him and helping him kill the mobs. I will usually take his target so that I don't have to redirect him. But if he turns to one of the elites, I will make him go back to one of the strongs or until all the strongs and the weaks are gone. And then he'll turn to the elites. And my job at that point is to throw out a dot when I feel like it, or heal when I feel like it, or make sure he stays bubbled, just keeping him up. And basically we're going to kill everybody and survive. So that's a pretty fun way to play. But when at level 34, when you get Force Quake or Lightning Storm on the Sorcerer side, it kind of changes the game a little bit, because you can start out the exact same way, send your pet in, do one casting, or you can run in, stand in the middle yourself, bubble up you and your tank and Force Quake the mobs down. Now, if you're going to do that, you may not do that big pull that I described before. You may just be doing a conventional pull. But the reason I run in and to do it is because sometimes what I want to keep the mobs all grouped together so that they're all in my Force Quake. And I don't care if they hit me, because they're probably not going to hit me anyway. They're going to be hitting my tank. But if I take a few hits, I don't really care. I mean, I'm going to bubble myself. I can put a hot on myself and usually I'll be fine. So two different styles. You can do the send your pet in and do a very methodical kill mob by mob by mob, or you can send your pet in and just AoE everything down.
I like that. You know, And I remember you talking about some of this stuff when you talked about leveling as a healer in general, about picking the mob that your companion's going to go to next. And, you know, either that mob by mob by mob, which I'm thinking of in terms of the Sergeant York, shoot him like a flock of turkeys. And if anybody gets that reference, that's a total win.
I do not get it.
That's an old reference. That'll date me. But
don't
yeah,
tell us about that later.
I tend to do that on characters that I don't have a lot of AoE abilities. Like my Marauders tending to do that mob by mob, mob by mob by mob. But then the AoE and having that Force Quake Lightning Storm being a game changer, that does sound like an interesting switch. And deciding when you would do each one depending on the mix of mobs makes it interesting.
Yeah, I've had a good time with it.
Well, that's a good wrap up, I think. Broommark, do you have anything to say about Sorks in general and leveling up Sorks? Yeah, that's what Machia says too. The only good Sork is a healing Sork. Yeah,
yeah, baby.
and Machia does say that all the time. But yes. So that was good. If you have any other questions on leveling up as a Sork or clarification on any of the things that we sort of spewed at you there, let us know. Otherwise, I think our little EPC-9 droid here is filled up and we are ready to go. Thanks for listening. For comments or questions, we can be found on Twitter at MaxTheGray and at AIECMA, or drop in on Jedi Covenant and ask us for an invite. Our character names are in the show notes. For AIE Guild information, you can visit aie-guild.org or find us on Facebook or Google+ at AIE SWTOR. And we will talk to you soon.
Goodbye.